Hey yo, and here we go with another episode of We Talk Music on the air and in here. Once again, I am Martin, joined by the King of the Casters. He's the best booker in the business. He's the chief defender of the faith. What are the nicknames you got there, Mr. Brett Podcast?
Oh, geez, I don't even know anymore. I mean, you know, Golden Voice, whatever. It doesn't matter because, you know, as we've told people many, many times before, it's not about you and it's not about me. In this case, it's about two other guys. And they just happen to be really awesome songwriters, really fun guys, and really good musicians. They are David Diamond and Mr. Zero from The Kings. And I am super happy to have them on the show because This Beat Goes On, Switchin' to Glide, has been inducted into the Canadian Songwriters Hall of Fame, and it deserves it because, damn, it's an awesome song, and thank you guys for that.
Oh, well, thanks for having us on.
Yes, hello, Calgary. How's that? All right?
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah, sounds perfect.
Hello, Cleveland.
Toronto.
All across the world we reach.
Yes, you do. Right on. Awesome.
You bet. You bet.
Well,
so it's, you know, and it is a real pleasure to get you guys on. I mean, there's an awful lot to talk about. I'm always curious, you know, I mean, obviously – This Beat Goes On, Switching to Glide. I mean, that's the song, right? But I'm curious, what are the other songs in your you know, discography that you guys think people need to check out?
Well, that's a good question. We have on Spotify, I think we have, you know, 75 or 80 songs in there now. So there's been quite a few that we think,
yeah,
you know, they could have been hits or whatever, but as you probably know, you know, the record companies control what makes a hit and what doesn't. And so when we had our major label deal with Elektra Records in Los Angeles, and we're being produced by Bob Ezrin, I mean, that was in the big time, and that's why we were able to have a hit, really, and especially an international one in the U.S. and Canada and all over. But they have the you know, the money and the promotional ability to get radio on board, and we were very lucky that Bob did such a great job producing the song, and that when radio first heard Switchin' to Glide, which was the single on its own before the Segway came, we were pressuring them to put out the Segway because that's, you know, the way it should be, both songs together. And once they did that, it really gained a lot of traction and the phones started ringing all over the place because, you know, there's a famous DJ in Chicago named Bob Stroud who was with WMET back at that time. And, you know, he said, the first time I heard it, I knew it was a hit, you know, and so that's the kind of impact it had. And so, you know, we're very grateful for that, but you know, we do have lots of other songs that could have been hits. I think Should Have Been Me was a good one.
Don't Let Me Know, which was scheduled to be our second big single, but actually, right now, because Christmas is on its way, we have a fantastic Christmas song that has been aired quite a bit. But it is, of course, it's a Christmas song, so you only hear it around this time of year. But it's called This Christmas by The Kings. And it's a great tune. You guys should check it out.
Oh, we have.
Haven't heard it already.
Oh, totally, totally have. I mean, like for me, I love Unstoppable and I love If the Stars Come Out Tonight. Like those are just some great, great songs.
Okay.
And our the new one that we put out about a year ago was called another segue called Circle of Friends and Man That I Am, which we had mixed by Bob Ezrin down in Nashville. We went down and worked with him down there, which we hadn't done in many years. And it turned out really well, too. Once again, you know, being 5.5 minutes long, it, you know, nobody's really going to play it. But we just thought it was a, you know, another great song. And what we've been doing lately is going back and finding old, and we have some new stuff, but we have some old demos that were never given the real treatment, if you know what I'm talking about, because they're just sort of rough, but the song ideas are really there. And so lately, that's one of those ones that we resurrected, and we've been working on some other ones too, because, you know, you just got to get back in the studio and fix them up to the point where they sound, you know, better than the demo. And then we've realized that we can get to a certain point with producing and writing and doing all that. But if you really want it to sound like a real record, it's important to have somebody good mix it. And we just recently had Terry Brown mix a song for us, you know, famous Rush producer.
Yeah. And that might be coming out really soon, too. It's a nice ballad. We'd say it's going to be one of the best new first dance songs at a wedding. It'll take over from any of those other schmaltzies.
It's a schmaltzer, for
sure.
Oh,
yeah.
It's called When Dreams Come True, and the ladies love it.
Yeah, and all the gals we've played it for so far just go, I love that song. Anyway, so, but there are so many. I mean, Zero and I have been working together since 1970-something, and we seem to get along well as far as I can do music good, he can do lyrics good, and the combination seems to have worked out all these years, and we're good friends as well.
Well, and, you know, and that's makes such a difference to be good friends, because I think, I mean, we've heard so many stories about bands that they go out on tour and they just can't stand actually being on tour together, but they work together musically. So I think it's nice to work together, not only musically, but also personally.
Yeah,
well, I don't think that we were ever successful enough to hate each other.
I don't like Brett much. Makes me feel any better.
There you go.
But success, oh boy, I mean, we are so successful. So.
There's all kinds of levels of success, you know that, don't you?
Oh, that's right.
You know, I think money makes for all those problems, you know, that people have in bands. I think a lot of it is due to money and the who gets paid. I've just been reading a book about Levon Helm and how much he hated Robbie Robertson because he felt that, you know, Robbie stole all the publishing money and everything. You know, and that's been going on for a long time, so.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. But, it's great that you guys reach pretty much all over the world with your podcast. Is that true?
That is, yeah. I mean, anybody can listen to it, so you never know who's going to find it. Oddly enough, big in Germany
Well, as I was just going to say, we get fan mail and we get orders for T-shirts and various things from all over the world. Eh?
Well, and that's... And that's one of the great things about music, right? Is that it doesn't have to be Canadian music. It can be music that, I mean, especially when we talk about The Beat Goes On and Switching the Glide. I mean, how it did break into the U.S. and it can break a band all over the world. I mean, so when you hit on that kind of zeitgeist, that moment of having a big hit, I mean, it's amazing how far it can stretch.
We got an email today from a guy who works for an NPR radio station in Boulder, Colorado, and he was watching the video that we made for it, and he said, I watched it twice, first just to see it, and then he said, I couldn't believe the editing job on it, so he counted the number of edits that are in it, and there's like 500 or 300 or whatever it was, which, you know, nobody's ever done that before. You know, the thing has been on YouTube as, you know, 4,250,000 plays now, which is great. And we get a lot of comments on it every day, but nobody ever took the time to count the number of edits that are in it, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it must have taken you a very long time to actually package that thing up.
Well, yeah, it was part of the overall design to make the little documentary that we have. It's called Anatomy of a One-Hit Wonder, which is, you know, some people say, how can you call it that? But people are going to call us that anyway, so we figure we might as well just call it that. And, you know, but people don't realize, you know, how hard it is to have a hit anyway, especially, you know, an international one that like you say, is, you know, is reaching all over the world. So, you know, it's a really tough thing to do with all the politics of record companies and everything, but we did it. We're, you know, a couple guys from Oakville, Ontario, and well, three of us were from Oakville, and then Sonny was from Victoria, BC. But, you know, we just, you know, and we were never going to be a cool band like in Toronto, all the Queen Street bands and all this kind of stuff. We just wanted to be a good band, you know, and songwriting was always our focus from the very beginning. We didn't want to just be a bar band playing cover songs. That was never anything what we wanted to do. From the very first time we got together, we started working on songs, and that's been the focus ever since.
Well, and
that's actually another reason why we're so grateful that we got with this song into the Canadian Songwriters Hall of Fame. It's incredible. It's awesome when you look at the other songs that are in there. You know, with Four Strong Winds and Edna Fitzgerald and Big Yellow Taxi and all these songs, and now Switching to Glide is in there, and it's in Calgary, or Calgary, as you say. There's the Canadian Music Museum there, and the Songwriters Hall of Fame have an exhibit there, and they have a jukebox where all these songs are, and it's going to be in there forever. So that is really an incredible thing for us.
Yeah, I mean,
you mentioned the documentary. I watched the documentary, and
me too.
I mean, I recommend it to everybody. But there's a couple stories in there that are just amazing. We get you to, you know, kind of, if you don't mind, kind of go over again for us. And number one was, you know, Nothing Matters with the Weekend from a Tuesday point of view. And then you guys talk about this incredible brawl that happened that spilled out into the streets. That is one of the all-time great lyrics, by the way. It's so perfect.
Well, thank you. That was quite an event that we were playing. Actually, we're just at Dave's house here in Burlington right now, and just maybe a mile from here was this old club, which recently closed. But what was it called?
The Treetop, but it was in a place called the Estamina Restaurant. And right on the Lakeshore Road, just not too far out of Hamilton, Ontario.
And there was this place with the big windows overlooking the lake and all that, and they had fake trees going up into the ceiling called the Treetop. And for some reason, we played in a lot of places, including Calgary, where there's been fights. You know, it was at one point it was like it wasn't a good night unless somebody was beating up on somebody because, you know, you're trying to get them going, but this one really got out of hand, and as it says in the documentary, somebody was taking a swing at Dave, and our light man started punching him out, and then there was a whole bunch of cop cars outside the place, and somebody wrapped another car around a tree, and
yeah, we were looking out the dressing room. There was like a small patio upstairs that we could stand up. We could see all this action going out on the street. And this drunk guy gets in his car and revs it up, and he only got about 50 yards, and bam, right into it. So he didn't hurt himself very badly, but he's right in front of everybody. You hear everybody go, oh, no.
And then, you know, cops all over the place.
And everybody's going, oh, no. So it was pretty amazing.
Just another one of those nights. And that sort of inspired the, you know, Nothing Matters But the Weekend. But that line came pretty easy, but the one after that, like a kettle in the kitchen, that was harder to get, but you know, it did work out, and people have said a lot of nice things about those two lines, so thank you.
Yes,
it is. It literally is a perfect lyric, and on so many levels it works. You know, that's the thing about it. How much time is that? Is it that you spend trying to get those perfect lyrics there, Mr. Zero? Are you a perfectionist on every single line you're writing?
Well, yeah, you'd really try to make it. That one just seemed really important, and so it was. The documentary explains how we had the song, the demo, which you can find on the internet. The words in the first This Beat Goes On are totally different. But then that's what Bob Ezrin had to contribute. He told us in the studio that there's something wrong with this, so go fix it. And Dave went away and that day changed the chord structure of the song, which And that's the genius of the music in this song, is that it's one of those subtle things where it changes key in the middle of that song, and you'd never really hear that it does that in any kind of, you know, it's so subtle, you know, that it, but it's so clever and it works so well. And then it was like, well, we could keep the same lyrics that we had, but they were so weird. you know, lots of dusty mentals can be blown at any time or something was in there. And it was like, you know, that's pretty dumb. So we decided to, you know,
like a bunch of lunatics, like relaxed away past dawn.
Yeah. It was just a, you know, and so, but in answer to your question, it takes me weeks and, you know, usually a month or 5-6 weeks to write a song, because, you know, it just, that's just how long it takes to tweak it. And,
well, there's so many cliches lyric-wise that,
yeah,
you don't, you know, there's only so many love you, baby, baby, love all, you know, there's a baby, baby, there's a Justin Bieber sure likes the repeat words a lot, but,
well, but, and we have, you know,
we don't like that.
No, we don't. And so there's some, we have some good ones, I think, like Cosmic Groove is another one. That's good. I always like the words in that song. You know, and, or, you know, Lesson to Learn, or, you know, if We Don't Belong Together, that's another song that we have that was another good song. But no, it does take me, because we write from the music first point of view, whereas Dave will come up with a chord pattern and a melody line. And once he gets it so that he's happy with it, then he gives it to me, and then we try to, you know, try to work out what it might be.
Yeah, what does this mean? You know, does it mean something here?
You know, what could it be without being a cliche, which we just mentioned, you know, and, you know, there's only so many words in the English language, but, you know, you try to do your best to take another angle on what it could be, and that's what takes so much time.
Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the things that I really appreciate about you guys is just the different sensibilities. I mean, especially when you go back to the first album, I mean, there's a little bit of that, like, punk sensibility, but there's the pop sensibility. There's obviously the part where you actually want to be able to play your instruments and write good music. So I love that all these things kind of mesh together to give it an energy that, you know, some bands don't necessarily have, and you can see some of the various influences in the music, but it stands out on its own.
Right, thank you.
Well, we always felt that we were capable musicians. Like, we weren't going to be the greatest musicians, but we can certainly get the job done.
Yeah. And we don't go on stage and have all tracks. We're not playing with any tracks or anything. It's just, what you see is what you get, you know, and that's the way it should be, I think.
Well, that's the other thing, that when we did the, a couple weeks ago, we did the Songwriters Hall of Fame induction at the revamped El Macambo in downtown Toronto, where we played it probably 50 times, but this guy, Michael Weckerly, from the, what's that show? Shark Tank or one of those. He bought the place and spent $30 million. He took it all the way to the bricks and put in new flooring and everything. And it's like a video studio and a recording studio. Both floors have cameras and totally control room upstairs so that you can film and record and multi-track.
Yeah, as well as a live venue.
And it's a live venue as well. So unfortunately for COVID, it's made it a real, you know, they're just having small events in there. But when we got the thing, Doug McClement, who's one of the famous audio engineers in Toronto, who does, you know, everything from the Junos to the Olympics to everything else, and we worked with him. He recorded us at the Heat Wave show in 1980, which is another thing that was an awesome thing. But one thing that he said was that it was fun to work with us because we don't have any tracks. It's just four guys on stage playing and singing. And he's, you know, it's so rare these days that a band does that, because they all cheat. that's what we call it. Anyway, you know.
No, that's true. We had comments and the crew that were setting up the microphones and that for the live broadcast. So is this everything here? You know, because we just played through small amps, like small efficient amps as well. And, you know, the guy said to me, so this is everything. It's all here on stage now. You guys are ready? Oh, yeah. And he goes, wow, this is great.
Yeah, there's no Marshall stacks. There's no big giant amplifiers or huge whatever. It was just us and we play, and it sounded great, I think. Did you guys see it on the TV?
Anyway, you can find it. It's on Breakfast Television. It was broadcast nationally. And, you know, we did a pretty good job of it. We had to be there at 7 a.m., so it was a little early. But,
well, yeah,
we did
pretty
well.
Rock and roll doesn't start at 7 a.m.
No, unless you're up all night, but those days are long gone.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, how important is it to like really hone your craft? I mean, I know you guys played, you know, as Whistle King, of course, in the early days, but like so many live shows, so much time together. Like, how important was that to the Kings?
Well, Dave and Max, our drummer, they had both been playing full-time for years before we got together. And Sonny and I got together in Vancouver and started writing songs, but we were green as far as playing live. But once we started, we put the band together, Whistle King, we started rehearsing and we tried to get gigs. And then it was years of doing that. So, you know, we were able to, you know, catch up to the other two guys and be professional musicians, and of course all the inherent, you know, road stories that go along with it, from the divey bars that we played, you know, in Ontario 6 nights a week for, you know, years on end. You know, like you play up north in one of these sleazy hotels, and that one place, they didn't have a fire escape, so they had a rope that was tied around the radiator that you had to break the window and throw it out the window if the place caught on fire. You know, that kind of place.
That's awesome.
The canoe bed.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the, you know,
the canoe beds I've slept in, and then you end up just sleeping on the floor anyway. So,
well, the beds looked like, you know, in Psycho where he had his mom laying down, you know.
Now, we don't do that anymore, though.
I mean, that's hope not, you know, I mean, like, I guess there's so many differences, of course, between now and way back then when you were trying, when any band in Canada was going across Canada and trying to make it, because Canada's a pretty damn big country.
Well, there's that, too, but, you know, we were lucky that we came along in a time in the analog world when you were allowed to smoke in bars, and there wasn't a ride program outside of every bar, and people used to go out and see bands, and there'd be a stage, and they'd have some lights and a PA system and a sound man, and you could go in on the circuit, and that's what bands did, and you could play 3-night split weeks or 6-night whole weeks. And when we played on Yonge Street in Toronto, we used to do 6 nights and then 6 sets a night, and then 3 sets at a matinee on Saturdays, and then 6 sets on, you know, so 39 sets a week. And you get good at what you're doing because you're doing it so much. And nowadays, young bands, you're lucky if you can get a duo, you know, where they move the tables out of the way in a bar or a pub, you know.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause the rock clubs and that whole circuit are gone now. You know, I think there might be a couple left here and there, but, you know, and the smoking thing killed it. And then that generation just grew up out of it, and young people don't really care for live music. You know, they'd rather go see a EDM concert.
Yeah, I mean, it's so weird because you know, as the documentary proved, I mean, when you go to Denver and, like, just the various things that happen to a band, I mean, I think the experience is what it's all about. I mean, I can't imagine, of course, having people, you know, in unison giving you the finger and throwing things at you, but, like, it's...
But what a great story, though. We need that one, too. That was...
Well, that was... That was our big American debut, where we were signed with the record label, and we just played the Heatwave show at Mosport Racetrack in
just outside of Toronto here, which was, you know, an incredible thing for us too. And there's the footage of that now on our YouTube channel. And that we're really lucky to have that, because that was 40 years ago. And also, you know, we were able to donate the other footage that we have because we acquired it years ago. And then we were approached recently by Teenage Head, who are some friends of ours from a long time ago. And Doug Arrowsmith was making the documentary about Teenage Head that's been, you know, broadcast recently. And we were able to, because we own all the Heatwave footage, to let them use it for free. And if you've seen the Teenage Head documentary, I mean, the Heatwave footage looks incredible in that thing. And they were a great band. But in August of 1980, our record just came out, and Switchin' to Glide had just come out. And so we got some promotion money from the record company, and we hit the road in the States. And the first gig we did, we flew down to Denver, and we were opening for Jeff Beck, and then went to Texas for some more shows with him. But the first one, if you look at the Heatwave footage, you know, we were dressed up in, you know, leopard skin spandex or tuxedos and all this other stuff. And that didn't really sit too well with the crowd in the hinterland of the United States, especially because we weren't announced as being the opening act, and nobody knew we were going to be there. And these, you know, we come out like a freak show, which is it did well for us in the bars. You know, if you come, if you go crazy and dress funny and do put on a show in the bars, it really helps get your name out there. But
and if we had been playing like with B-52s instead of Jeff Beck or the, you know, the Pretenders or anything like that, it would have worked fine. But we come walking out on stage, you know, and the lights come up, and everybody's expecting Jeff Beck, and there's us.
Yeah.
And right off the bat, it was just started off booing us right as we hadn't even played a note yet, and we're getting booed.
Yeah. And when we were working on the documentary, I got hold of a reviewer that worked for the Denver Post or one of those newspapers down there. Just wanted some background on it, and I managed to track this guy down, and I got him on the phone, and I said, I don't know if you'll remember, but, you know, I played with a band called The Kings, and he goes, Jeff Beck, 1980. He says, I reviewed hundreds of shows, and I've never seen an audience treat a band worse than that. So we can all look back on it and laugh now, but it wasn't very funny at the time, I'll tell you.
We only had to play for half an hour, and which wasn't very long, but we had to stand up there, but and we stayed, and we took it. We played till the end of our half an hour and left, and by the time we left the stage, it was just covered in everything you can think of, even a shoe. Somebody threw a shoe at us.
And money and everything else. And money really hurts, right?
Well, so you sure. Yeah, it's not like they're throwing dollar bills at you.
These were quarters and stuff like that, and it really hurts. Our drummer got hit in the forehead, and he started bleeding a little bit.
We're lucky they didn't have toonies down there, for sure.
Well, and you know, that's one of the things that I really love about you guys, too, is the fact that you're doing such a good job of telling your story. I mean, you look at the website, The Kings Are Here, and there's so much information on there. I mean, you talk about the documentary, just all the stuff that you put up on YouTube. I love the fact that you're really doing a good job of just putting yourself out there, because I wish that more bands did that, but you guys are actually doing it.
Well, you know, we get comments on our videos and Facebook stuff, and we try to answer every one of them as best we can, because, I mean, that's what social media is, isn't it? I mean, to try to keep that connection between what you're doing and the people that are supporting you. And if somebody takes the time to make a comment, I think we kind of owe them a response to it. So we're happy to do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's so true, but like I say, I mean, it feels like a lot of bands just don't take the time, and so I think it's definitely appreciated that you do. So, are you looking at being able to, I mean, projecting ourselves into the future when theoretically we don't have to worry about wearing masks and can actually gather for live music, you know, are you looking to tour again and do that kind of full setup?
We'd love to, yeah. I mean, that's, you know, it's something that we miss doing. We don't really want to play, you know, sort of some lousy bar gig anymore, and we did that. But, you know, the type of gigs that we do, I mean, we're a great support act for a larger band or, you know, at a big club, something like that. But, and we're hoping that it comes back. I mean, we play more generally in the summer when there's more outdoor shows and that kind of venue. But this COVID thing has knocked the knees out of every band and every artist. Is feeling the pain, not to mention the residual effect down to the guy that sells the hot dogs at the venue and the ticket taker and the security and the truck drivers. And, you know, it's just outrageous the number of people that are suffering because of this thing, you know, but there's never been anything like it.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, you know, and we talk to so many musicians, and of course everybody's reactions are, you know, similar and yet different because everybody has a different overall experience personally. But yeah, especially I think in Canada when we think about a band like the Kings, and so much of that is built around you and being able to play your songs and just kind of be seen. So hard to have that reduced.
Well, it is, but you know, we've been in the studio, we've been working on new stuff, and you know, trying to keep busy, and that's important to us to keep our hand on it, and you know, having the videos out there and the YouTube channel and all that, especially, you know, with Switching the Glide, whatever the algorithm or the matrix or whatever, you know, it just reaches a lot of people, and you know, over 4 million plays, and it's like, you know, mostly in the U.S. and Canada would come in second with the viewing on it. But it's a really gratifying for us, and the thing and what people say about it. And one of the things they say the most often is how happy it makes them. You know, and especially lately, it's been, you know, COVID has hit everybody so hard, but this is a song that actually rejuvenates people and makes them happy, and that's like what a great thing that is.
Mm-hmm.
Great better.
Well, it's one of those songs. I know that for me personally, when it comes on the radio, it feels like it's the song that you stop doing whatever else you're doing because you just want to listen to it.
Well, that's and somebody said recently, it's a song that when you get to where you're going, you turn off the car and you listen to the rest of it before you get out of the car.
So yeah.
That's good too, right?
Yeah, definitely. You guys were always such a great live performers, you know. And I don't even know. I've seen cheerleading squads that were less coordinated than you guys were on stage. You know, the jumping and the different things you're doing in unison. Did you guys ever piss off a band that you're opening for because they could not follow that?
Well, I mean, yeah, you know. We don't really, as time has gone on, we don't, and our knees have given out, they don't do that as much. We kind of stand and deliver, but that was our way of being noticed back in that time. And it's amazing how easy it was for us back then. You look at the Heatwave show, and it's just, it's awesome how the movement and the coordination, like you're saying, but yet we're playing incredibly well too, and that I know I can't do that anymore. I have to look at every note I'm playing now. Never used to look at the guitar, but you know, and Dave has to sing and play, you know. It's like, you know,
we used to want to give everything. By the end of the night when we played, or the end of a show, we were beat, like we were like a bunch of racehorses in the barn. We'd just be steaming. our drummer Max, he used to just see. Remember, we'd go in some, like in an arena where it's a little chilly, you know, like a little chilly in the back rooms. He'd be sitting there, and that's what we used to. He looked like a racehorse that just ran, you know, a full long race, and it was. And we're all sitting there going, "Holy moly! That was what a show! That was a great show!"
You
know, and we're all just all beat up, and our guitars are rusted up and stuff from sweating so much.
He was steaming. He would literally be steaming in the dressing room.
Yeah. It was. We used to give it everything we had, and I guess we're paying for it a bit now physically, but we still put on a great show, and we were just in New York City just last January, just before the COVID thing. And we did pretty good down there. Just we had a great time, and the people had all the folks in the audience had a great night.
Well, and that's that's really all we can ask. I think that's all any band can ask. It because time, unfortunately, still undefeated. We that whole age thing, can't resist it.
No.
Well, but yet The Stones are still out there.
Yeah.
Paul McCartney's still out there. The Eagles are still out there. You know, they don't need the money, obviously. And so, it's just something that is in your blood, and you really feel it's something that you want to keep doing. And unfortunately, this year has just been a write-off. It's such a drag for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily we have a rehearsal studio here at my house, and Zero and I can get together, distancing, social distanced, and we can work on stuff and get our jollies off a little bit anyway, playing some tunes.
And that's the other thing, when we do rehearse with the band, it's not halfway, it's full tilt. Because there's no other way to really approach this music is you got to just crank it up and go for it. And so, the rehearsal, it's still full bore. So that's another thing we like about it as well.
Do you ever choose to rehearse songs that maybe aren't in the set? Some deeper cuts or that kind of thing?
Well, we do that. But then you get into it, and then you reach the point where you find the reason that you're not playing that song.
You come to the point where you go, oh yeah, that's why this song doesn't quite cut it.
Yeah. And
this needs fixing, and then you get a bummer, and then you're bummed out. You let's go back and play Switching the Glide again.
We rarely play Switching the Glide at the rehearsal, although we did getting ready for that thing at the El Macambo. But having close to 100 songs to choose from is, in a night you might play 15 or 20, and they might as well be the best ones, and that's what we try to do, the ones we like playing.
Mm-hmm.
But you are best right. We do go back and play some of the other songs that we used to play in a set. And, but as time has gone on, we've got more songs that are available to play. And you go back, and some of them they're great tunes, and we haven't played them for maybe 10 years or more. And, some are great, and some you find the flaws.
I would just think it would be so interesting to kind of, work the different muscles on the songs and kind of almost refresh your fingers and voice and stuff with those.
Well, you do, and it's amazing how much you can forget. I was lucky enough to be at my buddy Doug is a friend of Keith Richards, and I was lucky enough to go to a Stones rehearsal at one time, and then they were rehearsing in Toronto, and somebody said, let's try this song. And they couldn't remember how the song went. So somebody had to go find a CD and a CD player. And I was sitting there watching the Stones, listening to a CD player go, oh, that's how that goes. So we're all in the same boat as far as that goes. It's you can remember sort of how it goes, but actually putting your fingers and singing it, it's a whole different thing.
Well, yeah, and I guess that's why so many people still, travel with the, with the prompters and stuff like that to be able to remember the lyrics.
Well, we fortunately haven't had to do that.
the first guy we saw do that was Frank Sinatra. When we saw him in Toronto, a whole bunch of us went down to see that, and that was the greatest thing I ever saw in my life.
I saw Frank Sinatra as well, actually, on the 80th, so in Calgary, so that was, I agree.
I mean, we saw him in 91 or 92, I think. He was at 75 years old.
Yeah, I think that was the tour that I saw him.
Yeah, I think he did a long tour. And his son was the conductor of the orchestra, right? I think that's what it was.
Yeah, Frank Sinatra Jr. was the musical director.
And Stephen Eady. Stephen
yes,
Eady
yes,
was the opening
that's,
act.
That's right, yep. So totally the same show.
All
yeah.
Right. Okay,
yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
And I always remember... From that show, I remember this line that Steve Lawrence had, which I have said many times, but I always thought it was a great comment. He says, "You know, I'm a lucky guy. I got a wife and a car, and they're both working." That was so Las Vegas, but it's so good, you know.
Oh, that's amazing.
But he had teleprompters. I think that was the first time we really saw. Frank had TV screens all around in front of him. Every direction he looked, he could have some lyrics there, which was very good for him at that point, I think.
Yes,
whether
I mean,
you use it
sometimes.
Or not,
yeah, think. That's yeah. Right. Sometimes it's just, you know, oops, you need... Well, and I mean, for instance, I know Martin and I saw Guns N' Roses live, and Axl missed lines out of Sweet Child of Mine during that performance. And it's just like, how do you forget something from Sweet Child of Mine? But it happens.
Well, I've done the same with Switching the Glide. And later on, it's just because your mind is somewhere, you're totally somewhere else. And then you, oh shit, you know, I mean, I forgot that line. I'll just sing it again later on, or I'll make it up, you know, or sing the wrong line or whatever. Right?
But so that's
a lot
it.
Of pressure.
Yeah. But I mean, that's live music,
yeah.
Right?
It doesn't happen very often, but it does happen. It happens to all of us.
Well, guys.
You guys have been
thank you so much.
Generous with your time, you know. We really appreciate it. This is part of the show where we give you guys the chance to, it's like the floor is yours. Say whatever you want, do whatever you want, promote whatever you want. Hopefully there's something to promote out there. I know, like you say, you can't do the live shows, but we want to give you the opportunity here.
Well, for us, I mean, we've talked about most of this stuff, but for anybody that wants to find us,
yeah,
our first album was called The Kings Are Here. And so, The Kings Are Here is our website. The Kings Are Here is our Facebook page. The Kings Are Here is our YouTube channel. And so if you ever want to find us, The Kings Are Here is the way to go. And like we mentioned, we try to interact with our fans that take the time to send us a note. We'll be happy to respond to them. And all the kind things that people say about our music, it means a lot to us. And don't ever think it doesn't, because it does. And, you know, we maybe, you know, didn't get rich doing this, but we've had a lot of gratification from the amount of respect that we get from our peers, and also from people in general, how much they love our music. It really means a lot to us.
Yeah. There's more than one way to be rich in this world, you know?
Mm-hmm.
More than one way to be rich. Yeah.
That's right. George Absolutely. Bailey, the richest man in town.
That's right.
That's right.
And again, our... Don, be sure you listen to our Christmas song, and as soon as we can get out there to Calgary, we want to get out there to the Hall of Fame and check out our little induction.
Yeah,
our little display.
Yeah, we'll
there.
Meet you there.
That's right. We'll come and we'll share a drink together. That would be a great idea.
That'd be awesome. We love that. Thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you. Well, yeah, it'd be off. We didn't say who's paying yet, so.
Oh.
It's Martin. That's who's paying.
Yeah, well, I'll pay. What the hell?
We're the rich rock stars here. Oh, yeah. We'll pay, guys.
We'll buy one Budweiser, the king of beers, beer of kings.
Yeah, yeah. Like we always say, we'll get you a draft or domestic beer.
Awesome.
Those are my favorites. Absolutely. Well, thanks, guys. This has been a blast. Yes. You've had so much fun.
David Diamond, right, Mr. Zero, the Kings, all the best to you guys, and we look forward to talking to you again in the future.
Well, let's do it. Let Eric know, or send us a link to where we can find this, okay?
You bet. Absolutely. You bet. No problem.
Or when it's going to be up.
Yeah, for sure. I would say probably sometime next week. So thanks a lot, guys.
Okay, we'll promote it on our thing. Thanks.
Merry Groovy. Christmas and all that stuff.
Oh, same to you, and stay you. Safe.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks. Okay. Talk to you later. All Thank right. you, guys.
Bye now.
Bye.
Get Trudy. He said to call you up if I was feeling moody. Hey, little Donna, still wanna. He said to ring you up. Just one call. Like a bunch of lunatics, we'll act your way fast on. Sure, we'll be rocking till our strength is gone.
listen to